The Laughter Permitted podcast is brought to you by Ally. Do it right.
Hello. Welcome to Laughter Permitted. I'm Julie Foudy. She's Lynn Ozawi. Hi, Lynn.
Hey there, Jules.
I don't like to toot our own horn, Lynn, but we are crushing season 7, if I don't say so myself. Mm-hmm. In fact, my mother-in-law, Ruthie, would say, if you're an ice lolly, you'd lick yourself to death.
Oh, you know I love a good Queen Ruthie reference. I'll give you one back. You're a treasure. You ought to be buried at sea.
Ought to be buried at sea. But sometimes you gotta own your awesome. Maybe more appropriately, our guests' awesome. And we are going to keep the party train moving with our guest today, snowboard cross champion Lindsay Jacob Bellis.
We spoke with Lindsay fresh off her double gold performance at the Beijing Winter Olympics.
That's right. In her 2 decades in the sport of snowboard cross, Lindsay has stamped her name in the history books and literally defined the sport. She's won 5 world championships and is a 10-time X Games gold medalist. She has competed in 5 Olympics, taking silver back in 2006, her very first Olympics, after being in the lead going into that final stretch. And she fell doing a board grab off the last jump, literally yards from the finish line. And now 4 Olympics and 16 years later, Lindsay was able to not just grab that elusive gold. Do you get it? Grab. But get 2 golds at this past Winter Olympics in Beijing. She won in snowboard cross and mixed teams snowboard cross with her partner, Nick Baumgartner. Lindsay shares how this Olympics was on her terms, and the results speak for themselves. So get comfortable listening. It's Lindsay Jacob Bellis.
Hey there, Dope Village. As y'all know, Ally has backed Laughter Permitted since day one of our podcast as our financial ally. And honestly, Lynn, I might just tattoo Ally on my forehead. And Ally is currently on a mission to change the game for women sports.
And get this, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, Atlantic Coast Conference, United States Golf Association, and the Las Vegas Aces, Ally has committed to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And you, my friends, can be part of the change by watching your favorite athletes crush it on TV, by going to women's sporting events in person, by, I don't know, maybe listening to every single episode of this amazing podcast on Trailblazing Women. Because every time you show up for women's sports, you are helping move the game forward. You can learn more about Ally by visiting ally.com. Hey there, Dope Village. Lynn and I have been involved in women's sports our entire lives. And truly, we've never been more excited for what's to come in this women's sports space. And one big reason, Ally. Ally has made a commitment to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And that means more money going to women's sports and more visibility for what these incredible athletes are accomplishing. Ally is on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
So here at Laughter Permitted, we're going to keep telling the stories of trailblazing women. And every time you listen in, you are part of that change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com.
Kick back.
Hi, Lindsay. Hello. Hi. I'm well, thanks.
Well, thank you for doing this, knowing how crazed you are and just back.
No worries.
All right. Should we do this, Lindsay?
Yeah.
The first thing we always do, Lindsay, on the pod is we have you set the scene. So where you're at, what you're doing, how you're doing, all of that fun stuff.
Well, Lindsay Jacob Ellis, I'm in Stowe, Vermont, visiting some family, and it's snowing outside, so it was a really fun drive. Actually, it's been a long time since I was driving in the snow, so it was nice to be out there and avoiding the snow plows. I'm just excited to get on the mountain with my brother tomorrow because I don't get to ride with him all that much. And especially over the last 2 years, it's been challenging to be able to link up with family. So I'm excited to have, you know, 5 more days of downtime, and then I will be heading back to Europe to finish my season.
Oh, wow. My God.
Wow.
I can't even wrap my brain around that one. Oh, how are you doing energy wise?
I got back pretty much the day after my race with Nick, and you know, it took so long to get home, but when you're crossing the international date line, you know, it's just it ends up being the same day as when you took off, even though you felt you've been traveling for 24 hours, and that was the case. So I got back super late, and the first week was just horrible jet lag, and I could never get on really a good schedule, and I was just trying to do as much work and Zoom and stay busy during the day so I would stay awake.
Gosh.
But it was definitely a struggle, but it's been great to, you know, have time with my parents, you know, get some home cooked meals, and just be
you get to see all the fam. That's
yeah,
so great.
Be back with my dog and my parents' dog. So it was just nice. And my brother came, you know, after, you know, the first week that I was there, they actually drove down to Connecticut. And so I got to hang out with my brother and his wife and their 2 kids. So I've had some good family time, which is nice because I've definitely been lacking that in the last 2 years.
Well, I was just going to say that Olympics looks so crazy. I mean, to not have any family, to be in your little bubble, to always be masked, even for interviews. I was like, wow, they're even tighter than they were in Tokyo. I was in Tokyo for the summer games.
Right.
What was it like?
I mean, it just became automatic to just always be wearing the mask. So I think it was your own comfort if you went through the mixed zone with or without a mask. But we had been following a certain protocol for the last 2 years that the U.S. team set up. And it was great that we had started that protocol very early on, because then it didn't seem so foreign or forced or so aggressive at the last minute. So it became second nature. And, you know, we all adapt, and everyone in the world had to just pivot and adapt to the circumstance. And you had the concept in your mind, you're like, okay, there will be an end game to this, but part of our sacrifice as being an athlete now just adds this COVID dynamic as well. That was just what we mentally had to be putting in our heads.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. It became part of the discipline, it sounds like, of you being an athlete.
I felt I had to mentally prepare myself and give it some sort of structure around it. Otherwise, you are just constantly in this feeling of, when is this going to be over?
Right.
Oh, I'm so sick of doing this. Instead of turning it in that negative mindset, it's just, okay, we've got 4 months to the Olympics. We got 3 months to the Olympics. Like, we're almost there. This is the end game. This is the reason why we've been staying so strict. It's because we want to make sure we can get there.
Well, and everything really paid off. Your 5th Olympics, 2 gold medals. Can we just take
clap
a moment?
For Lindsay, let's do this.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was incredible. And my mindset going into these last games was really just for it to be about me and my experience, because the media has over the years tainted my experience of the Olympic stage. And a lot of people that come only once a year to look at my sport, they really only have a definition of me in those moments. So, you know, I just decided I wasn't going to do any media prior, that I was going to enjoy doing opening ceremonies, be engaging with the people that I haven't seen in a long time, and just working on my recoveries and making sure my equipment was all set up and dialed, and I knew how to get on which bus wax rooms were here, the setup was here. Like, we just, it took a few days to understand the whole layout. And I made that more of a priority than having to get in this outfit and go do media or, you know, because everything is so just always outlined from the moment that you're there. And I just didn't like that feeling because that's what I've dealt with in the past. So I just decided to step away from the media and just create my own experience.
Give some context when you said the media has tainted your Olympics.
Well, ever since 2006, it was, you know, this feeling of failure and shaming the country because a 19-year-old made a mistake at the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how many 19-year-olds that you know that have never made mistakes, but mm-hmm. I was forced to relive mine every 4 years mm-hmm. when ultimately it's a race. It's just snowboarding. It just mm-hmm. so happened to be on the world stage, but it was just constantly... It just, for lack of a better word, it was annoying. And it just, yeah. It seemed like the media was trying to always drain this energy from me. So right. I didn't want that to be the situation. I wanted to go in having, you know, the best mindset I could and make it about me because yeah. this race should be my experience. It should be every athlete experience. And a lot of the times the media comes in and they want to put their own spin on it. And I can now say, you know, they can't really put any spin on it. Right.
Oh no, the story, like to come full circle as you did, that's the thing. I was in Torino in 2006 when that happened for NBC watching it. And my heart, like to this day, whenever I saw you compete, my heart like fell to the floor for you. But I was amazed at how well you handled that, Lens, with you saying in that moment, and I don't know how much it haunted you post, but every time I've heard you talk about it, you've said, look, you know, I'm a young kid that was making a grab. That's what we do. I was far ahead and it wasn't me showboating. It was just like, we have fun in snowboarding and we celebrate the fun. And I thought, oh, that is amazing. So to be standing as I was watching you for this Olympics and your fifth Olympics at the top of the hill and they had the camera right on you, I was a hot mess watching you. I can't even imagine you in that moment knowing you've gone to 3 subsequent Olympics after 2006, didn't medal. And did you know this was your last Olympics or is it your last Olympics?
I mean, this is undecided. As you know, I'm still finishing out my season, so I'm not just hanging it up and being done. I have given this sport a lot and I've helped shape this sport, especially for women. So it's a weird thought to just be like, okay, I'm done.
Right.
And so well, that's probably can't, healthy they can't, too. That can't really work with my mindset. And I have a lot of friends on tour and it's something that I enjoy doing. And that's also what has kept me going. And so many people watching the Olympics that don't really understand snowboarding and the nature of the sport, it's hard for them to wrap their head around, you know, that mistake. And it's easy for them to, you know, shame the whole process, but really you're not in that moment. You shouldn't be allowed to judge. It's hard for me to watch any announcer or any person that wants to put their spin on it when they don't understand the mm-hmm. sport. And I have that empathy with so many athletes across the board, whether I'm watching a football game, whether mm-hmm. I'm watching, you know, collegiate, you know, soccer or whatever. And then you have announcers come in and say like this person, you know, messed up or they failed to do something. It's like, okay, like, let's see you get out there and try. Right. So my cousin, who is actually an NBC reporter, said to me recently, she's like, I feel I've been a better reporter because I've understood your background and what it feels like for an athlete to come short of their goals and to be empathetic in that situation, because a lot of the times reporters also feel like you owe them an explanation. And it's just this weird dynamic. So I just didn't want to deal with that. And I wanted to really enjoy going to the Olympics, all the outfits that we get and, you know, swag. Wearing all the team gear, and you walk around the athlete village and then you see other teams in their team gear. And everyone's just so proud to be repping their gear and their flags. And it's that energy. But then it's also this recognition of all these athletes that have sacrificed or changed their lives to be in this moment. So it's that just appreciation, it's that recognition, and it's that shared feeling of accomplishment to be making it this far. So even though you cannot speak to everyone and there's language barriers, like, you have those moments. And that's why exchanging the pins are always so fun. Like, you don't need to be able to be fluent in all these foreign languages to be exchanging pins. Those are still exchanging moments and memories and, you know, reinforcing the whole dynamic of what it means to be coming together for this time of peace and to be celebrating why athletes have made it to this stage.
When you won gold in the women's snowboard cross, what was amazing was to see your competitors and how happy they were for you. So it speaks to what you're saying as far as what the games were all about. What did that mean to you when your competitors came up to you and were congratulating you?
It means a lot because we're all there. We all want to win essentially, but I feel, you know, Belle was one of the girls that came up to me first and she said, you know, I'm so happy that you did this. I remember watching you as a kid in 2006, you know, and you were someone that I aspired to race and race against in on the World Cup stage and at Olympics. And it was just so meaningful to get that female support and that they were ultimately happy to be sharing that moment. And it just felt so wonderful, and it felt earned. And, you know, all the blood, sweat and tears that I've put into this sport for 20 years, you know, it could have very well gone the other way, but the stars aligned and everything was in my favor that day. And I was riding well and my boards were running well and it just worked out.
Do you remember when in the race you realized I got this?
I was just so over the moon that I made it into finals. It gets harder and harder and harder to make it into finals, those top four spots, because semifinals was just as hard of a heat as finals. So I already felt like I had a huge accomplishment there, that I had a 75% chance at getting a medal. And I was like, okay, these odds are great. I like this.
Four competitors in the race.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I like these odds. This is something I can deal with. And just basically had that moment. And it was when the cameras were like right in my face at the top. And I was just, you know, I looked and then I waved, because at that moment I was like, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. I can't really predict. I can just execute the best I can. We'll see how it shakes out. But ultimately, I didn't want to try to shut that off, that I just wanted to have that little engagement. So I just didn't look so
That's
just
good,
cold and
I
shut off.
I might have been like this, like, hey, get out.
Yeah, but I know from past experience, the media will just bother you more if you try to push them away. Yeah. So I just had to embrace that actual moment. And we were held in the gate a little bit, and because we were waiting for the course to be clear. And I just had to keep saying to myself, you know, you've done more races than any one of these ladies. You've got experience in your favor. You know, if you don't win the start, you're going to hunt them down. If you win the start, you're going to execute. So I have so many multiple scenarios going on in my head. And it's kind of compiling as I move down the track. So when I'm in the gate, I'm just trying to say, you have the skill sets and you'll know how to execute when you're in the first turn, when you're hitting this jump, where you're positioning yourself. But to not have that chatter in the gate and in the moment, it's just, you will know what to do and it's going to be what it's going to be. You're either going to get a medal or you're not, you know, and that's how it's going to happen. So I feel once I learned I got the whole shot, that was when I was like, oh, this could happen.
Wait, what's the whole shot mean?
Like, so the whole shot is the first one to get to the turn.
Got
it. Who's initiating like the first turn and who gets in the turn first. So it's an advantage because then you get your line selection.
And yeah, you don't have to be. You came out of that last jump and you were in the lead. I was like, yes, yes. Because I remember you saying, if I could just get ahead of the pack and not fight through the pack, I'm good. I was like, she's there. She's there.
It did make a huge difference to not have to be working your way through the pack because you just run out of time sometimes. Like, and that's what happens on the World Cup Tour. A lot of the courses that we run aren't as long. So if I don't get a great start, I have to work my way through the pack. But I've told myself, you know, I'm great at running heat and managing traffic, and I'm good if I'm out ahead. So I'm in a great position, and it's just going to be how it's going to be. And, you know, I didn't feel like I had a great like pull in the first couple of features, but once I started getting momentum, I was starting to able to generate and get into a good flow. And once I got to the rollers and able to like use my full range, I definitely know I excel in that. And getting the whole shot was just like, oh, this could happen. All right, focus even more, execute even more, soft landings, good turns, not drag, like, so you just start just breaking apart the course even more because you're like, we don't want them to gain. We don't want to give any advantages, like just execute and focus.
If you had to compare your sport to another sport for our listeners who might not be super familiar with snowboard cross, what would a comparison be? Do you think race car driving on snow?
I would say that, a combination of that and roller derby.
I'm just going to say roller derby. That's what it reminds me of. Totally.
It looks like so much fun.
It's really fun because there are so many uncontrollable variables. So that's what makes it great for a spectator, but that's also what can kind of make it fun. Sometimes it feels unfair when you just get a bad, you know, hand, or you just didn't really perform well, or you got caught in traffic, or you got tangled with somebody, and that happens. But then when it turns around and things do work in your favor, you're riding well, and it just all lines up, that's what makes the win even better.
So after waiting 16 years to win your first gold, you go in and win a second. What, 4 days later? 3 days later?
It was 3 days later. I actually thought we were competing one day earlier. So I was, you know, swamped with a bunch of media stuff. And then again, they were hitting me up the next day and wanting to do more. And I was just like, you know what? I'm actually going to go up and watch the guys because it's more information I can learn for the team race. And I want to cheer on my guy teammates. And again, push the media aside. I did what I had to do like the night after winning, but you know, I was kept up till like 1:30 in the morning doing media.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to start up early that next day. And I just decided, no. I'm gonna go up and wear my jacket and ride around, see if the guys on my team need me to loop around and get something and just take some free ride laps and just be like, I won. I'm taking a lap.
I don't have to do anything you tell me to do. I just won. Well, yeah, you have another competition.
Yeah. And so I didn't want to get all drained, and I didn't want my sleep pattern to get just so messed up by staying up late. I want to make sure that I can still get to bed early, and then I'm not completely, you know, thrown. And so I can get back into you know, what I need to do for the team race. And then the mentality behind the team race was like, well, I just won. Like, it's not, I don't need to win again. And then I thought to myself, the Nick's going to want a medal. So I was like, oh no.
I know. He was so cute.
So I was like, oh God. Okay. Same process, same movement through the heats, you know, focus on just being one or two advanced. That's all you have to do. And finals will be all out. So yeah, I was really excited that Nick was able to have an immediate redemption. He didn't have to wait 16 years because I know how that feels. So, you know, his individual race didn't go how he wanted. And I understand. And I know that pressure and I know that pain. And I was just so happy that it came together for us to get again to be riding, and how we had to change our tactics because it started snowing. It was windy. So we had to ride the course completely different. We weren't doing the doubles. We were pumping everything. That's made the course even more fatiguing, because when you get airtime, you get a little recovery, but when you have to use every feature and pump it, gets a little tiring.
Because it's slower with all the snow, right?
It's slower. So yeah, you're even trying to work harder to generate even more speed. Because especially when there's a draft, you know that someone's going to try to get into your slipstream and use that to pass you. So you can't exactly just be along for the ride on the course. You have to be attacking the course. So you're just at least making it a little bit harder for them to pass you using your own draft.
I love all the new lingo we're getting. Hole shot,
slipstream,
rollers. It's good stuff. And then a real full circle moment when you do the grab at the end. That was the best.
It was so funny because I didn't even realize I did it again.
No way.
I didn't. And it was only because one of the Austrians gave me a hug and he was like, I'm so happy you threw in the grab. And I was like, what?
And it was like, instinctive.
It was just divine intervention.
I thought it was a big this to the media.
I mean, we can look at it that way now. It was maybe just my subconscious being like, you should do this right now, because it's going to play in your favor. So yeah, it was so exciting that came together, and that I didn't realize that I did that. So it did feel like a weight was lifted off of me, and it did feel like I took control of my own narrative with the media, and it was just done.
Yeah. You wrote your own story, as Dr. Colleen Hacker, one of our amazing repeat guests, talked about. And I hear how you designed your experience. You said no to things. It's just so much ownership and authoring with these games. A lot of lessons we can take away.
Yes. And I think that's a big thing. And that was what I was learning the most when I was doing my mental wellness and my prep going into these last six years, especially, because I wanted to make sure that I was taking care of myself and that I was aware of what I maybe needed in the moment, whether it was just mental, physical, whatever, to really just understand me instead of just being this blueprint or this product to just follow suit. Mm.
And with Nick at 40 years old, you at 36, you guys became the two oldest snowboarders to win an Olympic medal ever.
Yeah, I coined it 80s babies because I was sick of hearing old, and I was like, all right, let's use seasoned. Let's use a positive spin on this, because
veterans.
Ultimately it was veterans, and it was experience, and it was not getting frazzled. And when you see courses like this, and X Games where we had similar courses like this, it played in your favor to have experience. We do see a lot of young riders. They're very strong. They have very powerful movements, but it doesn't always help when you don't have the experience in pack racing, and not to be panicked in a moment and to, you know, be fine that you're kind of on somebody's tail and you don't have fully control of your edge because it's on somebody else's board and you're still going off a jump, it's like, okay, well, I'll only use half my edge and hopefully we'll get some space in the air and then not land on each other. So instead of, you know, you see a lot of the younger kids get a little frazzled and they're not ready in those moments to understand how to keep themselves calm. And it's a process that, you know, took years to master. And I think that was a huge skill set advantage that Nick and I both had.
80s babies. Okay, finally, how would you describe your journey to someone who doesn't know you?
I would say it was a journey with so many ups and downs, and there's pressure and there's expectation that I even put on myself that is unrealistic. But ultimately, I always strive to be the best, no matter who I was competing against. It all started with my brother being 5 years older, and whatever he was doing, I just wanted to beat him. And it came around like 20, 25, when I'm just like, well, maybe it's just not feasible for me to beat somebody who's 200 pounds, just stronger, but I can get close.
He's going to take some credit then for those two golds, I'm sure. And the five Olympics.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many people that have influenced my whole background in snowboarding. And especially there's some women that were very pivotal in it. And Leslie Olsen was one of those, because I remember being so, so young and small back in the US Open days and being tiny in the gate. Like I was just like below the gate handles, and I'm looking up at these girls that just seem fierce and fearless. And, you know, you look at them with admiration and also a little scared, but you're like, I'm with them and I'm going to give it my all. And Lena Ostewald was another female that I just was in awe of how well they rode and how they would attack a course and how they didn't seem scared of any jump. And back then, like, the jumps were very big. I mean, similar size to what we were hitting or even bigger. And for a 12-year-old to be having to face those courses was a little scary. So I owe a lot of that to those ladies, my brother, you know, my coaches that, you know, took me through courses or helped me just feel better about myself attacking the course. There's not one person. So, I mean, just that no one's really understood how deep my journey has been. It's been 20 years of surgeries, wins, losses. Mm-hmm. And it was just wonderful that I never gave up on myself and I still loved what I was doing. And that was what was also driving me to keep going, because I didn't want to just be done and have that be my mark. I wanted to see, you know, I could go for another 20 years. Sounds like a good number. I'll shoot for that. And we'll see how number five.
And 20 years of Olympics too, of back to back to back to back to back, just to stay in that mentality for that long. Let's see if that five Olympics serves you in the Lynn game, Lindsay Jacob Ellis, because this is intense. And because I have no competitive outlet anymore, this is where I get actually my competitive juices.
Okay. I respect that. And I probably will be in that mindset one of these days. I mean, I could see myself like
you have
pushing
to
a stroller. I mean, when I even babysit like my friend's kids, and I'm like, well, this baby's kind of heavy, but not really heavy. We throw some other things in here and make this stroller and go up the hill just as fast. So I could see if once a competitor, you're always a competitor, and you need to always be. It's not sad. I think it's just understanding that expression. And as long as you can find that healthy outlet, then I think you're winning.
Here it is. Let me win. That's your thing. Let me win, please.
Lindsay, you are going head to head with Julie in a trivia game. There will be five questions, best of five wins, and all of the questions are multiple choice. Here's the key. If you think you know the answer at any point, you can make your noise to chime in and answer the question. And on that note, what is your noisemaker today?
My noisemaker is my nephew's baby rattle. It's actually a little dumbbell, little weight. Aww. It's really cute. So
that is super cute.
Jules?
We've got the pig is back. I'm not squeezing it yet because Swaggy, oh, she's stirring. Swaggy, my dog, will go crazy. Watch, Lens. It's complete madness once I squeeze this.
I believe it.
The theme
she
of this
loves this pig.
The theme of today's game in honor of 80s babies is all about the 80s.
Oh no. I like it.
Oh, I was born in the 80s. I didn't exactly know the trivia, but I'm going to try my best.
Here we go. Question one. Who sang "I Think We're Alone Now" and gained popularity singing in shopping malls?
Tiffany.
I think we're alone now.
Is it Tiffany? Is it Tiffany?
Correct.
Or do we get multiple
come on! You didn't even need the multiple choice! I'm in trouble. I really stink at this. Okay, 1-0 to Lindsay.
You knew the tune, Jules. That was pretty good.
I think we're alone now.
Question two. Which sitcom had an alien from the planet Melmac? Is it A, Alf, B, Third Rock from the Sun, or C, Star Trek?
Alf, I want to say.
Oh, that was who? I don't know who got in first.
Oh, I can barely hear the squeak.
It's because Zoom, like it's too loud for Zoom. I think I was in.
All right. Well, I said the answer. But
What do you say, Jules?
I wasn't going to say that, but now I'm going to say that because Lindsay started than me. Alf.
Correct. I don't know. This is a tough one. We might have to.
Okay.
That might be a wash.
We'll throw that one out.
Okay. That was a practice for Julie.
Thank you. Here comes Swaggy. Can't have it yet, Swaggy.
Swaggy's,
it's a very important Swaggy's game
mounting
going
a
on
protest.
Right now.
Question three. What was the highest grossing movie of the 1980s? Is it A, E.T., B, Raiders of the Lost, Lindsay Jacob Ellis?
It was E.T.
Correct.
Oh, what? Such confidence, too. She's like, got it. Damn it, I've got, Swaggy, you cannot have this yet. I'm squeaking in on this one. I have to save me.
Question four. What NFL team performed the Super Bowl shuffle in the mid-80s? Is it A, the New York Giants, B, the San Francisco 49ers, or C, the Chicago Bears?
Chicago Julie. Bears!
Correct.
Oh, boom! She's back in! Swaggy. Yeah, you get it.
Question five. Where did the 1998 Winter Olympics take place?
Wait. What was the first question? I can't hear over Swaggy.
88.
Where did the 1988 Winter Olympics take place? A. Was that a squeak, Julie?
South Korea.
Incorrect.
Oh!
She didn't even want to wait for the multiple choice. I want to wait. I'm ready.
Sorry. Is it A, Nagano, B, Salt Lake City, or C, Calgary?
Calgary.
Correct.
Oh!
Lindsay Jacob Ellis
so
keeps her winning
with
streak
that one
going.
Too. Oh. Of course she wins on a Winter Olympic question. Well done, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Okay, most pressing questions. Lindsay, coolest place, because I know you're a big surfer, coolest place you've ever surfed?
Oh, gosh, there's a couple of spots. I mean, Fiji was incredible to surf Cloud Break and some of the breaks around there, knowing that that's like a WSL break. So, you know, you're like, oh, the best in the world come and surf here. I'm not the best in the world, but I feel a little good, you know, a little bit better about myself. And I feel I'm a good surfer, that I'm even just, you know, in the mix. So
plus
that
you're
was,
just in Fiji. There's that. I would just want to be in Fiji.
And that whole island vibe and like all the natives, they're just, they're amazing, wonderful people, and they teach you about their ceremonies and bring you into their whole culture. It's really cool. I would recommend going there. It's incredible. Jealous. The clear water is like pretty okay too.
Yeah.
That's a squeak.
Swaggy. Lindsay, on your Instagram, you had a great post. You said, Sweet 16, it came down to day 5 of the Olympics, bib 5, and my 5th Olympic appearance to get the gold. What was Sweet 16, and now does number 5 have a special significance to you?
It was just some, you know how sometimes you just see numbers, and it was 16 years, and then I qualified 5th in time trials, even though on some of the training days I had, you know, top 3 or 1. So it was just weird how that went down, and it wasn't my best qualifier run, but I ended up with bib 5. So I have, you know, fifth best lane choice. That's what determines who gets to pick what gate, is how you qualify. And my 5th Olympics, and I kind of just started seeing all the 5s. And then Team USA, we had to, our qualifying points between Nick and myself, we also ended up team 5 for our qualification. So I just thought that that was so cool as well. So I was just seeing all these 5s everywhere, whether it means something or not, it was just a cool coincidence to see how that lines up. And that kind of goes with my thought process and everything, that sometimes just the stars have to align for you to get the gold. And so that's what so many people still watching don't really understand, because everyone that makes it to this level has the ability to win gold. Yeah. And you're really only fighting to separate yourself at that like 1%. Yeah. You're looking for that 1% advantage on that stage, on that moment. And it's just minutes that determine your fate.
So good. So true. Okay. Last segment, Lens, is high, low cheer. This is something I do around the dinner table with my kids. They're high of the day, low of the day, and someone they cheer for to show gratitude for others. But for you, we're going to do it of your career. So the high of your career, the low of your career, and the cheer is for someone you're grateful for who's helped you along the way. We'll start with your high.
Okay, the high is definitely winning 2 golds at 36.
Yeah, baby!
And I would say the low of my career was what I was thinking and what I was feeling about myself when I was letting that 2006 moment define me so much. And I want to say that someone that I'm thankful for is my coach, Peter Foley, because he was recognizing that struggle and that pain that I was having. And he helped me find somebody that would help turn myself around mentally to still be aspiring and still be winning throughout my career. Because even though I would go and I'd win World Cups or X Games, I still felt that I had this part of me that still wasn't good enough. And whether that always kept pushing me or not, it was still that struggle. And that's not fair to be treating myself that way. So I was really happy that, you know, Peter linked me up with Denise Shul, and we found the best way to mentally prepare myself going forward over the last 6 years.
Incredible. Yay, Peter. Yay, Denise. Cheers to them too. And a big old cheers to you, sister, for
Thank you.
20 years of setting the standard in this sport. Lynn and I both were discussing how we've just been so amazed at watching your career evolve and all well,
you've
done.
Defined a sport. You've yeah, literally defined a sport.
Well, thank you, ladies. It's great to have the support from so many different individuals.
Yeah, and then just 20 years later to be able to win those two golds, I'm just thrilled for you. So congratulations again. Thank you for taking
thank
the time
you.
Amidst all the craziness.
Another incredible story. It just blows my mind that four Olympics later, 16 years of living out that moment in Torino, and she completely crushes it with not just one gold, but two at this past Olympics. So good. All right, Lynn, takeaways. What's yours? You go first.
It was cool to hear how Lindsay designed her experience at the Beijing Games and was willing to say no to things that did not align yeah. with what she was there to do.
Yeah. Very intentional with that, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was an amazing moment as well. Also, in... Sorry, Ann just brought me in something. Just that was nice.
Let's
thank
keep
you,
it,
honey.
Let's keep it rolling. We're not going to edit that out. What did he bring in? Now I need to know what he brought in.
He brought me a little morning smoothie. That was nice.
Aww. He's a keeper.
Uh-huh. He just plopped it down as I was riffing along. Okay. I was thinking the same thing when she was saying that, how she said, this is, I'm designing my own Olympics. This is, I'm not doing what I don't need to do,
mm-hmm.
which is hard for a lot of athletes because they think, oh, the Olympics are my moment. I got to do all this media. Mm-hmm. I got to wake up at this time. I got to go to bed at this time in terms of doing it on their schedule. And she's like, nope, not today. Not
nope.
today. I have two quick takeaways. One, the fact that she didn't even realize she did that board grab at the end to win the second gold. She was literally in the air and grabbed it,
mm-hmm.
which was kind of a flashback to Torino 2006 when that didn't end so well. And she did that to win her second gold. I thought that was rad.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one was... that moment at the top of the gate. And these are the moments where you're just about ready to go. You're starting. And this was before she'd won gold. And she's having, as she kind of walked us through that self-talk of, I'm just, what's going to happen is going to happen. I'm just going to execute the best I can, embrace that moment. And with what, you know, Alana Myers-Taylor had said to us last week, like, it's fine. Don't, you know, you've done more than anyone. Experience is in your favor. If you don't win at the start, you hunt them down. She's going through all that self-talk. And it's in that moment, I find those moments right before it's you know, at the start line, in that moment, how are you talking to yourself is everything. Fascinating to me.
How did you talk to yourself before big moments?
I usually did just a little dance move and maybe the worm and then...
Wait, for real? You'd break out the worm in the locker room?
A lot of dance moves. My go-to was not to think about it too much. As mm-hmm. you know, I'm yeah. not a big analyzer. And so if I started analyzing, it was like, oh no, it was just feel it, have fun. Go do it. You put in the work. Let's go. Which is kind of like what she was saying. Like,
that
just
is
go
self-talk.
Execute.
Yeah, that's. I would yeah. say that qualifies as self-talk.
But if I started going, okay, I need to think about how I'm playing this ball in or mm-hmm. Where my positioning is, it would just be like paralysis analysis. What's the word? Paralysis by analysis. Thank mm-hmm. you.
But would you actually do the worm in the locker room?
Oh, yeah. Back when I could do the worm. Now it's just a dying worm. A half dead worm.
You got a snort out of me. We haven't had a snort in a while. Do you know the two snorts that you've done in the history of Laughter Permitted? Do you know what's elicited them?
Two snorts? I've only done two?
As far as I know, as far as my mental snort tracker goes.
What are they?
The Brandi Chastain, Christina Lee episode.
Of course.
That one was really good. That was fun.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but I snort with them a lot.
Yeah, I think it was... I think it was...
Oh, it had to have been Mia's FIFA, like, hole in the pants story. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
I had to there might be three snorts. Yeah, oh, I snorted through that whole story. God. Still my favorite of all time on this podcast. If you haven't listened to that, you have not lived. Go back to the Mayhem episode.
Totally agree. And that's the first... That's the first... podcast we ever recorded, and I think we peaked.
We peaked at one. And then it was all downhill from there. Okay.
That's our new motto.
We peaked at the first.
We peaked at one. And then I think you had a snort in Emily Sonnet and Lindsay Horan's, if I'm not mistaken. I think Emily Sonnet got one out of you. Maybe in a kind of a mini snort, but that episode was funny too. Oh my gosh. That's a good one. If you are looking for some lightness in your day, if you're at a moment where you just need to laugh, cue up Lindsay Horan and Emily Sonnet. Maybe first Mia Hamm, then go to that one, then go to Brandi Chastain and Christine Lilly. A lot of
it's
laughing.
It's always the soccer gals. We're funny. Soccer gals are funny. All right, questions permitted.
Yeah, speaking of soccer, this comes from Nautical Nan on Instagram, and this question is for you. First, she has a really lovely comment.
Nautical Nan?
Mm-hmm, and then a question. She says, I just want you... and Lynn to know that I love your podcast. I listen to at least one podcast per day to get a boost. Thank you, Nan.
Aww. So,
Julie, this goes to you. What or who inspired you to be such a great soccer player?
Oh, gosh. What or who inspired me?
Mm-hmm.
There really wasn't a who, because... we didn't have any female role models back in the day to play, especially in the soccer, world, because we were the first gen, really.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it was more what. I just loved being part of a community. I've always been like that. I was a hyperactive child that needed to run and get that energy out. So
I would say you're still a hyperactive child.
Yes.
Who needs to get that energy out.
Yes.
I mean, yep. That in the best way possible.
Exactly. Some things never change. I am somewhat of a Peter Pan. And then, when you're surrounded by awesome women all the time and on the various teams, going back to the mighty soccer at Go Green Machine. Nobody messes with the Green Machine. Nobody even attempts
the scene.
The scene. Nobody messes with the Green Machine because the Green Machine is mean. Boom. Going back to the Mighty Soccerettes, when you're hanging around rad women all the time who are very like-minded and competitive, and that competitiveness is embraced rather than shunned, it's a beautiful thing. So I think it was more my teammates that were the inspiration behind that. Thanks for the question, Nan. Nan, yes?
Yeah.
And thanks for listening every day, Nan. That's a lot of Lynn.
Do you remember we peaked at one?
We peaked at one. And with that, thank you to everyone in our dope village. My village is dope. for spending time with us. Oh, I need to check in with Carrie Walsh Jennings. I miss her. A big thanks. She's the one who came up with our Dirt Village. A big thanks to our sponsors, Ally and Dick's Sporting Goods, and to Kate Diaz, of course, for our theme music. And as always, kids, remember, sing it with us.
Laughter permitted.
Julie, I'm setting the scene. Julie, sitting in a leather.
I snorted. I just snorted.
And they were too big.
Who's the person running back and forth with the pants?
I don't know. I never got her name.